Hello and welcome to The Entrepreneurs on Monocle Radio, the show all about inspiring people, innovative companies and fresh ideas in global business. Today's programme is all about why it's good business to do good in the community. We'll meet the founder of the world's first island resort to earn B Corp status and hear how it's changing the game in Colombian hospitality.
Sustainability doesn't have to be this awful, dreary, boring chore. It can be something that inspires your staff. It can be something that your customers get really excited about. And at the same time, you create opportunities for local people, and local people start to take more care of their communities.
This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Tom Edwards. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Monocle presenter Georgina Godwin. Georgina, welcome to The Entrepreneurs. A bit of a turnaround, a rare moment for you on the other side of the mic.
I'm going to grab my moment, Tom. It's so exciting.
Now tell me, it's a sort of a bit of a special edition. You have been out roving and reporting around the world, and you were in the devastatingly beautiful country of Colombia. What were you doing there, Georgina?
I was there for a literary festival for Hey Cartagena. So Cartagena is this fantastic walled city on the Caribbean coast, really ancient, really beautiful, although surrounded by a lot of poverty, but it's a really lovely city. And I was there for a literary festival interviewing a few people, and I went to a party on the city walls hosted by the British ambassador, as you do. And somebody came up to me and went, "Georgina Godwin," as if she knew me. And lo and behold, it was our Ilsa Crawford, who is a designer very well known to Monocle, involved with Etem, the hotel in Sweden. And she actually she's married to a Colombian, and she has a place in Colombia, in Cartagena, a very beautiful apartment, which I went to the next day. But she was very, very keen for me to meet a young friend of hers called Portia Hart. And once I'd had a conversation with Portia, I could absolutely see why. This woman is a force of nature, absolutely beautiful, but driven by this entrepreneurial zeal, and not only to make money, but to make a brand that does good in the world. And I was just blown away by her and by the place that she then took me to.
And I think that's really interesting, because it's the thing we keep coming back to on this programme, which is about this change in, I don't know what you'd call it, sort of intentionality about how and why we do things and we do things well. Great story, and I like it. It's about networks and friendships and a serendipitous meeting, which is so much of what we sort of enjoy when we have these conversations at Monocle. But tell me about the place then. Let's put it front and centre. We're going to hear, I guess, from her in a moment, but what's this setup and how does it deliver to that vision you just mentioned?
Well, as we'll hear, she turned up in Colombia not speaking any Spanish at all, really, and decided she would stay and create something there. So she took me out to the place she's made, and it's called Blue Apple Beach Club, and it's basically the Riviera meets Colombia. It's very, very beautifully done. And it's like your classic Riviera beach club, but in Colombia. And you go out on this little boat, it only takes about 20 minutes to get there, and it just stunning landscape. Of course, you're in the Caribbean, and she's created, kind of hewn out of nothing, a wonderful place where you not only just go for the day, but there is a great restaurant, there are places to stay. But she's really, really invested in the local community, and she's taken that a step further, because on an island there, when she first got there, certainly there was no way of doing any kind of waste disposal or anything like that. So she had to create all of that, and she found by creating it for her own business, she could then expand that and do it for other island businesses, and now has expanded it into the city of Cartagena itself. So she has a guy on a bicycle that goes around collecting everybody's old bottles, and then she's got a group of women who then cut up those old bottles and make beautiful things out of them. And I think Ilsa actually advises her on that, and they've got sort of vases and beautiful objets that they make. So just, yeah, this circularity, as you say, was just so evident and just so lovely to behold in this great environment. I mean, what's not to like when you're being fed a kind of five-star lunch and some superb wine?
The bicycle man, he'd need a sidecar, wouldn't he, if he's picking up bottles from Georgina's house? Possibly.
Quite possibly.
Maybe a tandem. Georgina, let's have a listen to your dispatch from Colombia. Here it comes.
I was born in Suffolk in the 80s, so Thatcherite, capitalist, go-get-it Britain. I was educated in the UK up until university. I went to university in Edinburgh, and I graduated just about the time that the first of my life financial crash happened. So I was kind of young cohort of graduates going into London thinking we were going to take over the world and it was going to be nice and easy and fun like it was for our parents. And it was really grim, honestly, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew that I didn't want to work for Procter & Gamble. I didn't want to work in a bank. I didn't want to be a lawyer. And all of the career fairs were those things at university. And I sat around in London for about a year. And I was living with a friend who worked for Prada. And after she'd paid rent and bills, she was at a loss because her salary was so low. And we lived underground. We took an underground train. We went to work in offices with no windows. We had no money. And it was the summer of 2007 where it rained every single Saturday and Sunday without exception from May through to September. And basically we said, no, this is not what life is meant to be. We just sent our CV off to places with nice weather and hoped that one of us would get a job. And that was how I ended up working in the south of France. And she actually came with me. And she worked in the Antibes office of the company I ended up getting a job with. And I worked in the Monaco office. And we found ourselves within about 6 months. We rented this tiny little villa, but it was still a villa. We had a pool. I drove a Vespa to work along the coast. And we said, yeah, we've made it. We're out of London. The sky is blue and life's great. So that's the background. Obviously, I didn't stay there.
So tell us about coming to Catalonia.
I thought I'd be in Monaco, France, Nice for a couple of years. And then I thought I'd grow up. And I ended up being there for nearly 9 years, 8, 9 years. And I just had this overwhelming sense that I wanted to live somewhere where there was a sense of optimism and hope and this feeling that our best days are ahead of us. And I'd been to Argentina on holiday and thought, wow, Latin America's really exciting and it's super sexy and it's fun and wouldn't it be great to live in Argentina? And then I kind of investigated a little bit and realised that would not be very easy as a foreigner. I didn't speak any Spanish. It was also still really naive. And a friend of mine married a Colombian, British guy, and he said, I'm moving to Bogota with my wife because she's pregnant and she wants the kid to grow up in her family. I'm going to start a company. Why don't you come and help me be my right hand? I said yes before I had any details. Quit my job, I sold my flat, I moved here. They ended up staying for about 6 months. He never opened his company. She hated it. And by that point, I was here and I was really honestly just too embarrassed to go home. And I'd thrown a huge party and told everyone, I'm moving to Colombia. And I thought, well, I'll stay as long as it takes me to learn Spanish. I'll do a kind of a backwards gap year. And I got to Cartagena and I really just straight away fell for Cartagena, and not just because of all the things that you've seen that are lovely. You know, it's a UNESCO heritage site, it's really vibrant, you know, it's next to the sea, the weather's nice, and my mum, who's from Trinidad and Tobago, I got to Cartagena and I suddenly felt at home in a way that I had never felt at home before. Suddenly here I was in a place where everybody looked like me, and it wasn't hard to buy makeup, and it wasn't hard to find a hairdresser, and everybody looked like they could be my cousin, and I actually saw my mother everywhere, and not just in our physicality, but people's attitudes. And so being in the Caribbean was a huge part of why I stayed. And I didn't really have a plan, but I figured, here I'm in a place where, even though I don't speak the language, and even though this isn't my culture and I don't know anything about Colombia, I feel at home. It ticks all my boxes, you know, I'm by the beach, the weather's nice, it's gorgeous, and it's coming out, and this is as a country, Colombia is coming out of a really dark time, and everyone you speak to feels enthusiastic. And everyone I met who was a foreigner who was deciding to live here as an immigrant was starting a company, but no one had any money. It wasn't this kind of cynical, oh, I've gone to a VC, or I've gone to private equity, or, you know, I've got a deck. It was just, oh, yeah, no, I just met a bloke and we're opening a mezcal bar, or we're starting a travel company because I'm from Colombia and I've lived outside my whole life and now I'm back and I want people to get to know my country. And everyone I met was under 35 and was starting a business in what felt like a really fun, enthusiastic way. So that's why I stayed.
Tell us about your business.
So I started with a company called Blue Apple, which was a beach club. It's now a small hotel with 11 bedrooms. And that has grown into a very small group of companies. So we've got Blue Apple, which is our original, and that's on the island of Tierra Bomba. We also have a tiny...
And that's where we are right
that's
now.
That's where we are right now, yes. It's my favourite, I have to say. You're not supposed to have favourite children, but Blue Apple is my... It's also the most complicated. And we've also got, there's three of us, another small hotel called Townhouse, which is in the middle of the old city, which we also opened to kind of answer a need that we had that we didn't feel that the market was covering. And I've got, separately from that, a very small beach club on the same island, which doesn't have any hotel rooms. That's called Amare. And we have a non-profit which specialises in creating jobs through waste management and recycling. So that's my four main areas of activity, and it's what I spend most of my time doing.
So let's go into all of this in a little bit more detail, because Blue Apple is stunning. I mean, we've come here by boat. It's about half an hour from Cartagena. It's a beach club, as you say. It has a few rooms, six rooms, something like that?
11 rooms in total. So six bungalows, what we call cabañas, and five bedrooms, which are in the original main house.
So it's a B Corp, which is fascinating and challenging and difficult, but you've achieved it. So I want you to tell us now about that whole sustainable side of your business and how you got that certification.
So when I opened, people always ask, did you open thinking that you were going to create this sustainable haven, and was that your main driving force? And it absolutely wasn't. When I opened, I really just wanted to start a company that sold rosé on the beach with good music and nice food. And I don't make any bones about it. And the sustainability came afterwards. And I actually tend not to use the word sustainable that much, because I really do believe that the world is in a bit of a mess. Or as I was teaching a friend of mine the other day who doesn't speak English, a native language, we're in a bit of a pickle. And I think we don't need to sustain the status quo. I think we probably need to repair. So we tend to use the word regenerative here, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it helps us to think a bit more about how we can actually improve things. And the reason we started to work like this was necessity. I've got many days where strange things happened and I was thrown, but one day a neighbour came and he was really cross, and my Spanish was a little bit better then, not fantastic, and he was saying, you know, you're throwing your trash in my land. And I said, no, that's absolutely not possible. We're really diligent, and we pay two blokes from the village and they come, because there was no waste, municipal waste disposal service, but we got these two blokes, they come around, they take the rubbish away. And he said, yeah, come with me. And we walked off to his land, and sure enough, there was all of my rubbish that these two enterprising blokes were relieving me of 100 quid a month or whatever it was, and dumping everything in my neighbour's land. And that was when I realised how naive and how lucky I had been, and we are in many parts of the global north, that we turn on a switch and a light comes on, we open a tap and water comes out, we put things in the bin and we put the wheelie bins on the street, and we all have a fight with our boyfriend or our wife about it, but it goes away. And here, suddenly, I didn't have water. We still don't. We would throw rubbish away and it would come back. We would turn the lights on and sometimes they would come on and sometimes they wouldn't. And so I realised that in order to serve wine and nice food and listen to nice music, I actually was going to have to get really good at logistics and infrastructure. And if you don't have millions of dollars behind you, the best way to do that is to be really resourceful. And resourcefulness is another way of talking about sustainability or regeneration. So we started to reduce waste massively, because I couldn't afford to put all of our rubbish into a boat and send it back to Cartagena. And also because, really, if you're standing on the edge of a big hole, looking at all the rubbish that you've produced, it's not a great feeling. And it kind of just flowed from there. And people always think, oh, well, regeneration and sustainability, it's really about the environment, and people will say, oh, electricity, waste, water, those are the three big points. And they are. There's another side to it which is often ignored, and that's the human side. And a huge part of being a sustainable business and certifying as a B Corp is how you treat people, not just your customers, but also the people that work with you, your suppliers, your neighbours, the community around you. And again, the nicer you are to people, the nicer people are to you. And usually that's good for business. So anyone that works in recruitment or in the HR department of a company knows high staff turnover is expensive. You waste a lot of time training. If you want to be nice to your staff so they stay, it's going to have better financial implications for your company. We employ 45 people from the local village. We help contribute to about 300 families through our supplier network. We don't have an armed guard on the door because our community looks out for us. And that sense of community and being cared for and caring for others is a huge part of sustainability. And in the global north, I think we don't understand a lot of the impact that our progress has had, or our day-to-day quality of life has, on people around the world. And so paying attention to people who were born with less than you or have less opportunity than you had is a good way of involving them in the conversation. And my staff are now huge fans and ambassadors for recycling programs, and they help improve the quality of life in their village as a result. So that's how we got into it. We applied for B Corp by mistake. We were the first island resort in the world to certify, because it is incredibly difficult if you have a business like this. I started reading about B Corp during the pandemic, and it was a bit like finding God. I just thought, yes, this is what business is meant to look like. Finally, what a fantastic framework. All these questions. This is so helpful. So I made an account for us and I sent it out to all my managers. I said, guys, every single one of you needs to read this for your department. It's going to teach us so much about how we can make this company a force for good. And one of them somehow hit the application button and I got this email from B Corp saying, congratulations on submitting your self-assessment. One of our analysts will be in touch with you to go through it and good luck. And that happened, I think, in February and we certified in December. So it was mad panic and rush, like, oh, God. But it's a brilliant path to be on.
There's so much here that speaks to your personal ethos, your values and so on. I'm really interested in your glass recycling. Tell us about that.
So waste in the hospitality industry, your two biggest waste items by volume, by weight and by inability to recycle because they're not worth anything to anyone, are glass and food. So any restaurant, hotel, bar, anywhere in the world, that's the biggest amount that's filling up its rubbish bin. And it's the least likely to be recycled or the least likely to be dealt with responsibly, the most likely to end up in landfill or worse, in the ocean. So we set about, because we could have all of our plastic recycled and we could send our paper off and we could have our metals recycled, we set about trying to find a solution for these things. And food waste was easy. You know, we've got loads of space here, so we built ourselves a compost system. We've got a kitchen garden. Glass was really tricky. Glass is heavy, which makes it expensive to transport. When it breaks, it's extremely dangerous, which makes it undesirable to work with. And the product that it turns into once you've recycled it is either more glass, which isn't worth very much, or glass sand, which is worth even less. And I learned that recycling is, like everything else in our world, a business. And if it doesn't make money, it doesn't get done. So here I am working next to a village that has, officially they say 30% unemployment. I live and work here. I could tell you it's closer to 80%. In terms of structured, reliable, pensioned, healthcare employment, it's about one in five people here that have that. And I thought at the time, the minimum wage in Colombia was about 1,000,000 pesos, which is about £200 a month. And I thought, okay, so if I can save 200 quid a month by not putting all my glass into boats and sending it back to Cartagena or paying the municipal waste company, by that time they were coming to the island, to take it away. And if I can turn it into a product which we can sell, £200 a month, that's not much. Even if it's not a formal job, that's still something that someone in the village next door to me might be interested in doing. And I convinced a British non-profit, it's a British trust called the Treebeard Trust, to basically give me a startup grant. And that enabled me to buy these two glass crushing machines. And we really like most things. I mean, obviously, here's a person that ended up opening a business she'd never worked in a country where she didn't speak the language or have any family. I've now got two glass crushing machines and I don't really know how they work, but we're going to work it out. And sure enough, we said to the people in the village, is anyone interested in doing this? Yep, yep, me. So long story short, over the next 5 years, we learned how to do it for ourselves and people come knocking on the door and say, can you do this for us too? Bars, restaurants, hotels. We currently work with about 20, 25 properties in Cartagena, not just on the island. So we have an electric bike with a wheelbarrow on the back that picks up glass. Last year, we recycled 100 tons. That glass is crushed here in the island. It's turned into glass sand, which we then sell for construction, which is the lowest value item. So it's really not worth much, but still something. We sell it for sandblasting, which is higher value because you have to do a bit more work to process the sand. And we sell it for filtration in water pumps and filters. Obviously, that's big business in Cartagena because everyone's got a pool. The businesses pay us a fee to collect the glass. So that covers the operating costs. And quite a lot of them, and you'll see this if you go to a bar or restaurant around Cartagena, will have a green apple mojito. The foundation's called Green Apple. They'll have a green apple mojito on the menu. And that means that 2,000 pesos from that cocktail goes to the foundation. And that's what helps them pay for their glass collection. We're also a registered non-profit, so any money that's donated by companies to us, they can take off their tax bill. So there's lots of different ways we use to make it as much of an incentive as possible. And last year we were able to raise $85,000, which means that our pilot scheme, which is basically what this is here on the island, can now expand. And we've just bought a really, I think, very sexy piece of glass crushing machinery from the UK, who are world leaders in it. And we will be opening a centre in Cartagena, and that will be able to work with about 200 businesses in hospitality. So we're scaling up by about 10 times. And the cool thing is it creates really good quality jobs for local people. They become experts in something that nobody else knows about. Our guys not only make money recycling glass, but they also make money working as consultants. We have two other island hotels in other places that have replicated our system. And so it's a really nice example of what you can do when you have to be resourceful. And you can prove we are the only glass recycling operation in the whole coast of Colombia.
So tell me more about Green Apple, which is the foundation and is separate from Blue Apple, the beach club.
Yeah, so I started doing all of these things at Blue Apple, and then I really wanted to share them, but I can't share them for free because they have a cost. So if we were going to recycle other people's glass, I had to charge them for it. And I felt very uncomfortable about people paying Blue Apple because I didn't really want people to think that I was making money from it, which in hindsight is silly because I was adding value. But we decided to set Green Apple up as a non-profit. It's completely independent from Blue Apple. It's got a separate board of directors, separate legal entity, a separate set of accounts. I sit on the board, but I don't make all the decisions. And Green Apple really exists to try to demonstrate to our hospitality industry here in Cartagena that you can operate in a responsible way, you can have fun doing it. Sustainability doesn't have to be this awful, dreary, boring chore. It can be something that inspires your staff. It can be something that your customers get really excited about. And at the same time, you create opportunities for local people, and local people start to take more care of their communities. And our goal is for it to be replicated, not just across Colombia, but really across the world, anywhere where unemployment is an issue, where hospitality and tourism are a source of income, and where minimum wages or national wages are low enough that you can easily cover a wage by charging for glass recycling and charging for the products.
Yeah. So you were showing us around a cabana earlier, and it was absolutely beautiful, cool, amazing art, a little swimming pool. Tell us about that.
So our cabanas are really the epitome of DIY. We do it ourselves. Those cabanas are built from cement, which, surprise, surprise, we make using sand, which comes from bottles that we crush on site. And once you get inside, with the exception of the ceiling fan, which I have not yet mastered, every stick of furniture in there is actually made on site by our carpenters. Colombia, when I first came in Cartagena, there weren't a great selection of furniture stores. Amazon wasn't an option, thank goodness, actually. And so we learned to make furniture. And the bathrooms are outdoor. People always ask, who's your interior designer? And I say, interior designer for us is necessity. It's whatever we have available, whatever makes the most sense. If it doesn't serve a purpose, then we probably won't put it in. The fabrics and soft furnishings are all locally made. So Colombia, especially the coast of Colombia, San Jacinto, is very famous for its hammocks. And what we do is we buy the roll of fabric just directly off the loom. And we use that to make our cushions and our bedspreads. And then even our bathrobes, we gave up with bathrobes long ago. And we have beach ponchos, which is great things that you pull over when you get out of the sea. And they're made of a toweling fabric. And that's got a fantastic print. It's one of my favorite things about Blue Apple. And that's an artist in residence who came to stay with us. And she painted people from the local village. But she said, I really want to make sure that this isn't exploitative. As an artist, I want to tell people stories, but I don't want them to feel like I'm sharing poverty porn. And so every painting of hers that we sell, or every poncho that we sell that has that print on it, money goes to the people who are actually the subjects, which I think is a really, really cool way of joining art and community. And in fact, all the art at Blue Apple that you'll see is made by artists in residence, because again, when we opened, we didn't have two pennies to rub together. So we just said to people, do you want to come and stay for free? And if you want, at the end of it, leave a painting, which, by the way, is an idea that I totally stole from the Colombe d'Or in the south of France in Saint-Paul-de-Vence.
Let's just talk about how else you're being resourceful here, because you have your own water filtration plant.
So there's no running water on the island, which means all the water that comes to us comes on a barge and we store it in a big water tank. And that works relatively well. I mean, it's obviously not the most amazing thing environmentally, because that barge is powered by diesel. And it's great until it's the windy, rainy season and the sea's really rough and your barge can't actually get to the island. So we do have to be really, really careful with how we use water. And a couple of years ago, we were awarded a government grant, which was very exciting because it enabled us to put in a German system of what's called reed beds. And I'm always amazed when something that I think ought to be very complicated turns out to be very, very simple. And this is a wastewater treatment system, which is 100% natural, involves absolutely no chemicals. It's basically just you pump all of your wastewater into a series of chambers and they eventually end up feeding a bed full of reeds, look a bit like bamboo, and you pull clean water out the end of it. And that's how we keep all of our gardens irrigated all year round without wasting water.
Another way that you're not wasting water is something that actually came from a great friend of Monocle, Ilse Crawford. Just explain what the noise we can hear of this glass.
So this is a vase which is made by the artisans of Green Apple. So Green Apple doesn't only crush and destroy. We also have a team of five women who make and they create water glasses, lamps, vases, candles from bottles. They actually supply about 10 restaurants around Colombia with all of their glassware. And this lovely little clinking sound is one of their vases. And Ilse, who's a great friend of Blue Apple as well, helped us to put this together. And it's basically you chop the top off a wine bottle and you turn it upside down and you've got a two-piece vase where in the top half, which is the top of the bottle, you can stick your flowers, or in this case our kitchen herbs, because we don't buy cut flowers, we just take what we've got in the kitchen garden. And then in the bottom bit you put your water, and if you work in a restaurant or if you're big into flower arranging, you know that you often have to change the water before you have to change the flowers. So this way you just take one pot out, hold it in your hand, change the water, Bob's your uncle. It's elegant, it's efficient, it involved no waste, it gave a woman from the village a job. What's not to love about it? Thanks, Ilse.
You're also doing a huge amount to keep your staff happy. And one of the ways you do that is creating a resort that really caters for them on their days off.
Yes, so that's Amare, which is a very small beach club just down the road from Blue Apple. It's not a hotel. And it came about because I realised that one thing is for us to educate and train our team into being able to provide a service which is international and of a high quality. And another thing is to understand that then we slightly ruined life for them. And quite a lot of our team were coming here on their day off. And I used to say, well, look, I'm really flattered and it's really wonderful and they've got a good staff discount. But you probably ought not to be at your place of work on your day off. And they say, well, yeah, boss, I go to another beach club and honestly, it's either just really expensive and rubbish or it's just rubbish. So we opened Amare with the idea, and again, unproven, but just another hunch, that if we took the same ethos and the same basis, but we just reduced the service level a bit, we could run something which was affordable without dropping in quality. So we have the same executive chef, poor thing, he doesn't get a day off anywhere where he doesn't work. We have the same supply chain, we have the same ingredients, and we have the same way of running the business, the same social and environmental commitments. But we just have a really reduced service. So it's a bit more what I would say like a pub in the UK. You know, you go to the bar to order your drink, you wander up to the kitchen and chat with the kitchen team when you want to order your food. And you don't sort of sit there expecting people to come and lavish you with attention. And that means that we can keep the pricing down. And it's become kind of the go-to beach club, not just for our own staff, but for a lot of the hospitality industry in Cartagena.
Portia, what's next for you?
Really good question. A nap. No, I've promised myself that the next thing I do will actually be super selfish and it will be for me. So I bought with two friends about 12 acres of land on the island last year and we're going to build a house. Well, not a house. We're actually building a village because why would we just build a house? And hopefully Ilse and Oscar, her husband, are actually going to participate and help us put the whole thing together. I want to do something which I'm calling the deconstructed chateau. So I have all these aspirations, you know, I want my parents to come and live on the island as they get into their dotage. I want my sister and her family to be able to visit. I want my friends to come and stay. So I'd like to have a house that's kind of elastic and can accommodate all these people. But equally, I've never been the type of person, and I don't think it's really correct to have this kind of Downton Abbey style massive monument to your own wealth and success when you're just not really using it. So with Ilse, we've been working on a brief to try and create this elastic community which can accommodate people as they come, but as they drift off, it's also a cosy place where I can be based.
And I should just point out here that Ilse is in fact the designer behind Ett Hem in the hotel in Stockholm.
So actually, my first ever conversation with Ilse was around. She told me, this place reminds me a bit of a company where I used to work, but not now as it is, but as it was then. And I said, oh, what company was that? She said, Soho House. And I kind of fell off my chair. And we talked about the evolution of Soho House and how it had been a huge inspiration for us here at Blue Apple, more for its nonconformist vibe. And then I was talking to her about how I was taking down the walls between front and back and house. And she told me about Ett Hem. And I think that's where our friendship was sealed, because it really represents everything that I believe in hospitality, albeit on, you know, on a much grander scale in Stockholm. We're doing it on a slightly more rough and ready level here in Cartagena, but same principle.
That was Portia Hart, the founder of Blue Apple Beach, in conversation with Monocle's Georgina Godwin. And you can learn more by heading to blueapplebeach.com. And that's all for this episode of The Entrepreneurs. We'll be back at the same time next week. Do look out for Eureka, available every Friday. The programme was produced by Laura Kramer, with mixing and editing by Tamsin Howard. You can listen again and find out more about the show at monocle.com, or you can follow us and catch up with the archive via your preferred podcast platform. To contact the team, email Laura on lrk@monocle.com. I'm Tom Edwards, goodbye, and thanks for listening to The Entrepreneurs.